Hello, this is Events Demystified, and I am your host, Anka. Podcast is brought to you by Trifun Events, and I'm so excited to be here with you all, especially as today on the air with me, I have a wonderful queen bee that will delight you with her tips and expertise in event-based fundraising and share how she's set to change the world one event at a time. We haven't necessarily met in person, I mean COVID, but we do have a friend in common, Zach Krohn, and any friend of Zach is a friend of mine. Before I bring her on, let me just give you a quick peek into her event background. AJ Stenberg has created outstanding fundraising events since 1999 with her Los Angeles-based event planning company. She has produced over 100 events and raised millions of dollars for organizations such as Cystic Fibrosis, Jane Goodall's Roots and Shoots, and Union Rescue Mission. In 2015, AJ launched Queen Bee Fundraising to share the art of nonprofit event planning with organizations worldwide. Through consulting, webinars, workshops, and speaking engagements, AJ's goal is to make her successful event planning strategies and resources available to all nonprofits, no matter their size or location. AJ has earned the reputation as a leader in event-based fundraising and is a recognized topic expert and contributor to respected nonprofit resources such as CharityHowTo.com. And I would love now to bring AJ in and have her delight us with her knowledge. Welcome, AJ.
Well, thank you for having me on. I'm excited to be here. Good morning.
Good morning to you too. I am so happy that you are with us today. And before we jump into our topic, because we have so much to talk when it comes to fundraising events, especially in this era of virtual and going hybrid, I'm just curious to hear about your journey through the pandemic last year and how you overcame the challenges posed at the time and yet still found a way to press forward through the crisis?
That's a really interesting question. And you're right. There was a split second when everybody in the event industry threw up their hands and said, "What the bleep? This is our not only our livelihood, but our responsibility, right? We feel really responsible for our clients and for the people we work for to help them get their events done." As 2020 started, I was doing a lot of teaching webinars, workshops, and suddenly the topic of how to create an amazing, successful live event was moot. It didn't matter anymore. Everybody instead was worried, what are we going to do? Do we cancel? Do we just postpone it? How are we going to raise the money that we meant to raise during our fundraising events? So what really happened for me was I did have that, oh my God, moment. And then I realized I was getting literally hundreds upon hundreds of emails asking, what do we do? And I worked with my partner at CharityHowTo.com, and we decided immediately to put on a free webinar, totally free to anybody who wanted to see it, on how to decide what to do with your event. That was the concept of, do you postpone? What to do with the coronavirus and events? And this was March. Hey, May, we'll be back on track, right?
All of us probably.
We thought at that moment we didn't know. But just so you know how desperate people were, they sold out the first webinar, which was free. They filled it up within minutes. I ended up having to do 4 separate webinars on the topic, and there were over 6,000 nonprofit professionals who sat in on it. Yeah. And it was a lot of information about how do you get your deposits back? How do you give money back tickets? How do you turn the tickets into donations? All of that. So that was my experience, was kind of feeling a responsibility to the nonprofit world to help them navigate those first months.
Absolutely. And it did help to have been established yourself as an expert in the nonprofit world and being able to bring some of those thoughts and ideas of what this might look like right now to everyone's perspective. Because I remember the same thing happened. Even though I do come from a heavy production background, I do work a whole lot with nonprofits. And out of nowhere, you know, production and technology became the number one topic of discussion, because until then, it was just something you have to add to your event and have that budget line, because otherwise, how are we going to hear each other, right? When we're in the room and we're, you know, enjoying our wonderful dinner and looking at all these beautiful flowers and the decor, right? AV was almost kind of like an afterthought, but we have to do it. It's like a pain point, but we're going to do it. We need to have it right. And then because of the pivot to everything becoming something that will have to be online now, there's no more venues, there's no more catered meals, there's none of that. Like the only avenue to get your message in front of your donors and your supporters is through the means of a screen. And we were put in the same situation where we had to come up with a plan. Mm-hmm. How are we going to do this? How is this going to look like? And I feel like a year later, we're back to kind of like the beginning stages of figuring out what now is going to be this hybrid event look like. And this is something that I love to touch on with you as we move through our conversation. But I guess before we even get there, because you did establish yourself as an expert, you've done so many virtual events in 2020. And I'd like to first touch on something that it is still a bit of a pain point for some nonprofits, and that has to do with how to successfully sell event sponsorships and engage sponsors. Mm-hmm. This in itself technically could be an entire separate discussion, mm-hmm. because there's so much to talk about, and maybe, you know, I'll have to have you come back and tackle just this subject matter alone. But just for the curious that just needs the top level tips, what is it your best tip or tips that you can give to successfully sell event sponsorships for your virtual, but even more so now your hybrid event? Mm-hmm.
Right. Good question. And I've been singing the praises of certain behaviors for nonprofits for 20 years, and I've been teaching it for 5 with workshops. And one of the workshops is just sponsorship. And it doesn't matter if it's live, hybrid, or if it's going to be virtual. One thing that nonprofits or anybody who's looking for event sponsorship, even if it's for a regular conference, one of the things that you really have been doing wrong, sorry, friend, but you've been doing it wrong. You look at sponsors as asking people for money and you put their logo someplace. That is not what a sponsorship is, whether it be in the real world or the nonprofit world. If you change your attitude towards sponsors and look at this as a relationship building endeavor, you will have phenomenal success with long-term sponsorships year after year after year, and you will build on it. Because what happens is you go after sponsors and you ask them for money. They go, okay, we'll sign on for $5,000, $10,000. And then they don't hear from you again until you send them an invitation to the event. And then they don't hear from you after the event. If you look at this as relationship building and you bring them on as a sponsor, you have not just yourself, but other stakeholders in your event thank them. If you send them updates, really exciting about what's happening with the event, build the excitement of it. If during the event you really promote them, you have hyperlinks. If it's a hybrid or a virtual event, you have hyperlinks during it where people can go to that sponsor. If you give sponsorship opportunities for people, discount coupons that people can go online to the sponsor, if it's a virtual sponsorship, any of that, if you're doing that, and then afterwards, send them a program. If you have a printed program, send them a digital program, which you should also have a digital program. Send them thank you notes, send them updates, tell them how much you appreciate it, and give them facts as to how many people saw their logo, how many times. And at that moment, when they're feeling like, man, this was great return on investment, that is the moment you ask them for the sponsorship next year.
And you continue the conversation. I've been in a situation where I was sponsoring certain events and I've only heard from that particular organizer before the event and during the event, obviously because of the sponsorship, but that was it. And then a year later, here we go again, the same cycle.
So this is the analogy that I use. You know how there's always that one friend who only calls you up when they want to borrow your truck so they can move their furniture? That's the only time you ever hear from them. I don't want to be that person who is saying, hey, I want to borrow your truck to move my furniture. Not that I've done that for a million years, but But you know what I'm saying is there's always one friend you only hear from when they want something. I'm an event planner. I have one friend I only hear from when she's going to give a wedding or a party and she wants my advice. So we want to build relationships. Yeah. And that's, I think, that Anka knows firsthand. And can I say one more thing about events?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Events. And Anka is so right that so many of you, whether it be a conference or a nonprofit event or any kind of a big event, a festival, and you look at AV and you think of it as, oh, it's something that I have to just throw money at and they'll take care of it. AV makes or breaks your event. A glitch with your AV team because you're a bad communicator, it's your fault, not the AV team's fault. And also, too, they have so many great ideas of how they can enhance what you're doing. Your messaging. Your messaging for nonprofits is king. I'm sure for a conference, your messaging is going to be just as important. So the two things that Anka will nod her head and say yes is you need to pay attention to your AV and then look at it as an important element. Even lighting is so important for everything. And the loop and the look at your AV team as your partners. And also, if you're not engaging your audience and you're boring them, everybody wants to know, how do we engage our audience with virtual events and with hybrid events? And I will tell you, why weren't you worried about boring them in live events? You were boring them at live events. Why weren't you thinking about engagement then? So let's learn our lessons and take them to the next millennium. You know, let's not make those mistakes.
Absolutely. And please do preach it, AJ. I feel like sometimes the only voice I hear is the one in my head saying the same thing. So I'm glad when I hear another voice, you know, pretty much confirming those things. I'm like, it's not just me that it happens to be in the production AV world and preaching the same things. I always enjoy when someone that has been there and done it can appreciate the importance of having not just a vendor, but a partner.
Partner. And they're tired. These AV teams, they start setting up usually the night before and they work until midnight and they get up at 6 a.m. to start doing the AV. They're exhausted. You don't need to take your stress as an event planner or the person in charge of the event. You don't need to take your stress out on them. I bring them candy and coffee. That's what they know. They know me as like the candy girl because I know that candy will help them. I know that sounds so stupid. Like, I have a little basket. It says thank you. And one of the secrets, Anka, I don't know if you'll agree with this, but when you have a partnership with an AV team, there are things that happen during every event where you need extra AV you didn't anticipate. A few lights, a few mics. When they like you and they know you and they know you're a partner to them, they're going to throw it in. They're going to do stuff for you, right?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more because, you know, as an event producer, I do partner with multiple event teams. I feel like I'm exactly the same way, AJ, where I really have this rolling cart with a crate full of snacks and coffee and whatever. You guys want some Snapple, like caffeinated tea? Here you go, you know, whatever it is, if you don't drink coffee. But it's so true because you have that relationship that you formed. And I haven't had... Okay, maybe in a few instances where from the get-go, I knew, okay, this is not going to go well because these people are like really so stingy. They're like itemizing every cable and every piece of tape. Like, hey, can I use this, you know, gaff tape? Is this going to cost me another dollar? I just want to know. It's terrible. Like, please don't be that person. We all give so much out of our hearts when they are appreciated. So the same way, you know, it goes both ways, right? This relationship is like a two-way street. I appreciate you. You appreciate me. And now we're both in this relationship and we both give because at the end of the day, it is the event that matters and I'll do anything to make sure that event is supported. And yeah, sometimes we do deal with some less ideal and nice people and you've got to put that professional face on and be like, hey, this is one event out of 50 that I'm doing this month. I'm going to be okay.
And you'll be okay. And I think that's another thing that people don't realize is how much pride all of us take in the finished product. We want this to be great. But if somebody's a bad communicator, really, some people just assume you know Absolutely. What they want. And that is not fair to the team, anybody on the team.
So true. And I think one of my biggest pet peeves is communication. You know, when you assume that just because you have all the information detailed in your head, I'm going to be able to read what's there without you actually spitting it out.
No. And if you've ever sat with an AV team and gone over your run of show, which is, for those of you who don't know, in a show, that's the minute by minute of what's happening, the minute that the stage light goes up, what happens on the stage in the end. It includes catering cues. So my run of shows is not only for my AV team, it's for catering teams. Because I don't want the catering team picking up clattering plates during the ask. And if you don't put that in your run of show, there's three words I use as an event planner. I have them. I can't even find them. Oh, here they are. Hold on. People think I lie when I do this. It's organization, communication, and appreciation. I literally keep this on my desk. As you can tell, I'm not lying about that.
I love it.
Because you have to be organized, meaning it's up to you as the event producer. Now, I'm trying to find everything that fell on the floor when I went to pick up my sign. But everything needs to be organized. It's up to you. Don't assume. You need to close your eyes and think the first step down the others. The second is communication, organization, communication. If you can't take all that you organized, it's useless. If you can't write it down in protocols and in run of shows. And the last one is appreciation, because if you are a jerk to the people working with you, they will not be able to form at their top.
And even if you're the best communicator, the most organized person in the world, I agree. I've worked with people that were excellent being organized and communicating well, but came the day of the event and you're like, oh my gosh, it's this person again. The moment you hear their steps, embracing for impact.
And I can't even imagine. And you guys work so hard and you have such long hours and you're tired and you're working with really sophisticated equipment that if you're not doing it right, everybody sitting there or everybody at the conference or at the event can see or hear any mistake. It's a lot of stress.
Absolutely. And the one thing you don't want is people turning back. Look, it's like, who's at a tech table right now?
It's the worst.
The room. It's the worst. Do not draw any attention. You don't want any attention. Just want to be in the background.
That's
nobody
exactly
hears. Nobody
right.
knows. Because the moment you do draw attention, something has gone really bad.
Right. If you see an event planner in the back going, you know that something has gone seriously wrong at the front of the house.
And there's this other thing that I would always, you know, communicate with my team, kind of like set the standard. Is like, even if things do go, you know, sometimes do go wrong, like something's just like, you know, it's not working. The way you're going to approach it and the way you're going to react to it is going to be like nothing happened. Because the moment you start freaking out as an event planner or event producer or AV team, then everything falls apart, because now everybody's like, oh my gosh, it's worse than, you know, you just make sure that nobody sees on your face that right now the sky is falling, everything is crashing and burning left and right, but you're not going to let them see that. You're going to figure out and find a solution before anybody figures out that something went, what happened? What happened? Oh, nothing happened.
Okay. Can I just tell a personal anecdote about something that happened on Monday? Now, this is not me as a paid event producer. This is me as a friend of somebody. Somebody's son died and had a funeral. Mm. And the burial and the funeral, which was very elaborate, was Monday. And I've been there for her, helping her. And something happened out of the blue on 10 o'clock on Sunday night, the burial Monday morning, that we couldn't bury the body. We're talking horse-drawn carriages with caskets and things. So I go and I talk to so basically the bottom line is that after a lot of Googling and me being up all night and trying to figure out what to do, I just told my friend, don't you worry, just show up, you do it. And everything happened, the entire memorial with the horse-drawn carriages and the color guard from the Navy, everything happened. And when it came to lowering the body down, the pastor got up and said, the family would like a private burial, so we'll be adjourning now. And everybody left. And nobody knew that what happened afterwards was we packed them up and sent them back to the morgue. You know, those are the kind of things that nobody knew. There's not one person there who knew that there was something amiss. But that could have been, in my life, because it was so personal, that could have been one of the most tragic things that happened. But the idea is that nobody knows, because it's very important that it doesn't matter if it's a gala. And I mean, we've had things, I'm sure you've had, it where the internet goes out and then the electricity goes out, the water goes out, so there's no bathrooms. I mean, things happen. And you just need to make sure that everybody feels that things have, and even if there's a mistake, you smile and you say, you know what, it's raining and we're at an outside event, we're going to move here. You smile and it usually turns out.
Before we move any further, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our main sponsor, Trifan Events, which is a boutique event planning and production agency that will come alongside you, offering personalized event planning and technical support, strategic event design, production and technology management, and flawless execution for live, virtual, and hybrid events. The team at Trifan Events is passionate about planning and producing event experiences that get people involved with true moments of interaction, engagement, and co-creation, while offering white glove treatment throughout the entire planning process, enabling you to reach your event goals with the use of creativity, production tools, and event technology. To find out how Trifan Events can plan and produce your event become memorable, go to trifanevents.com. Absolutely. I think the worst thing you could do definitely is running like a chicken with your head cut off, trying to figure out the solution. Obviously, you're going to try to figure out the solution, but the way it's handled, it's going to make a huge difference. And obviously, having backup plans and all those extra plan B, C, D, whatever you need to, absolutely important, you know, and you're going to have those as well. But in the moment, handling yourself well, it's so important. I've seen situations where there's a lot of movement in the back of the room and you're like, something is not right. There's way too many people freaking out there. And it's like, what can I do to help? At this point, nobody's paying attention to what's happening on the stage anymore, you know, because everybody's right. Like focused on like, what's happening right now? It's like, you know.
Right. Whatever the essence of your event is needs to stay the focus. And I think that because the reason people hire professionals like you and me is people don't always have the same skill set during stress.
Yeah. And I think that's definitely something that you learn as you do. The more you do, even if you're like in real life, you're not a chill person. I am not a chill person in real life. Okay.
I like to control
my husband.
Yeah. I admit it. I like to control certain portions of the world.
Exactly.
But speaking of control, I just want to segue because I know this is one thing that's really important to you is hybrid events. Because
talking about
controlling, it was easier in 2020 because you knew you couldn't meet than it is in 2021 because who the heck knows when we can meet and how big. Yeah. So you are a big fan of hybrid events. Is that true?
I am a big fan of moving forward. And to me, you know, looking at what this year might look like, the progression of things would be that eventually with the vaccine, and hopefully we have the opportunity to move forward into a hybrid reality of, I think we shouldn't forget everything that we've learned in 2020. We definitely need to apply those lessons to what 2021 looks like. And that means, you know, in events, we take this virtual event and now we're going to have to marry to a in-person event. Now, what I'm curious about, because this was the first thing that when we started talking, you mentioned, and that just sticked with me because it made so much sense, kind of resonated with my heart. And the one thing you said was, now we need to be careful. How do we gracefully transition back to in-person? And it's very, very true. Like we do have to do this transition gracefully. I was talking to a friend of mine, I think it was last week, and they were saying how for the first time in forever. Sounds like a song, but this is the reality. He was going to have an in-person event. He's a performer and it was like fantastic to finally go and meet in person. It was a social distance event. So everyone was safe. He was saying how when he got on the stage, people were looking at him kind of like, it's like people forgot how to gather and enjoy events in person in so many ways. And to me, I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, it was a little bit of a reality check because I didn't think about it. And I saw their reactions and I'm trying to be funny and they're not getting it. And I'm like, what's happening? Did I miss it so hard? You know, it's like, no, people are just like, I'm like, we're actually doing this. We're in person. So my next question to you is, I'm actually super curious to hear from you. What do you see this hybrid event experience look like when it comes to fundraising events? And you can go into as much detail as you like. I mean, the more, the better, because I'm just curious how other professionals and experts in the industry see how this will pan out in events in 2021.
Right. And I feel for your friend because he was probably so excited to get back to reality. And I think he's right. A music event certainly is something that would be a positive hybrid event because you have one camera or a couple cameras. You're playing to the audience and the cameras can take the music elsewhere. A fundraising event is a different beast because they say that hybrid events are like houseboats. They're neither a really great boat nor a really great house. They're just stuck together. And that's sort of how I feel about hybrid events for fundraising because fundraising events typically have a cadence that's 4 to 5 hours. And that's because you need to build community when they first come during the cocktail hour. And then you have the main event where people come and they've already bonded. And then you have kind of fun things, and then you have a real serious thing. There's a whole cadence to engagement. It's a formula. That's 4 to 5 hours. A hybrid event with people's attention span is only about an hour.
The virtual event.
A virtual event, yes. Correct. I'm sorry, I apologize. Yes. So how do you marry an hour-long attention span to something that's 4 to 5 hours? Now, the good news is that you already got the audio-visual down now because you got the great AV teams know how to do this. The smart people are going to look at breaking the events up into separate pieces, that some are just live, some portion is just live, and then the other portion is going to be the virtual event. The live event will be a for-pay ticket event because you're going to have to pay for food and venue, AV, just like everything. And then my suggestion would be to do a free opt-in on the virtual side where people can come in and they don't have to pay for a ticket. And you may want to charge for a ticket, but people are more likely to make a donation if they feel they've gotten something for free. And when you have a Zach Krohn up there or somebody awesome, they know how to say, hey, you guys sitting there in your pajamas drinking your wine, this is the time to pick it up. Say, hey, I didn't have to pay the $200 for the chicken dinner, but here's $50 for a great evening where I got to stay home and do the laundry while I watched you.
But let me just say something because this is something that Zach brought up in one of the past podcast episodes, because I agree with you. When I join virtual events, I'm thinking, especially if the purpose of that event is for donation purposes, I would definitely give more now that I didn't have a ticket price at the door, right? That's sort of like the way my mind works, right? Zach brought up this other point and... Sorry, Zach, you're getting too much airtime with this podcast, but lots of good things. If you guys didn't listen to the episode with him, you must go back because it was fantastic. So what he brought up was this other point of view in which he says something along the lines where if you do not charge for your virtual event, now you sort of like give people a way out not to partake into your in-person event because it does take an effort. I mean, obviously, all the extroverts were going to want to be there. They're going to want to dress up and go and party, right? But there's a whole lot of other people that are going to be like, well, I still want to support this event, but hey, why do I have to go out again?
Right.
Especially when I don't have to pay anything and I can just watch it from, you know, the comfort of my home.
Yeah. And I have to say there's different levels of donors. So as a professional fundraiser, I'm a CFRE, this is a stewardship. Any event stewardship, meaning bringing the donors into the fold or bringing them to a higher level is a huge part of it. And that's community building and relationship building. The way that you invite the people who you want to see sitting there, because when they pay $250, a lot of that's just going to cost. It's not like that money is in your pocket. But what you're doing is having a relationship building time with these people. It also is exclusive. When you say you're going to come for cocktails and dinner, it's going to be black tie. It's very small. We're only inviting our top donors. Mm-hmm. It makes it very special. And people at that bracket of giving like that exclusivity. It is not, gee, everybody can come. What you're doing then is you have the cocktails, they sit down to dinner, they start dinner, and then you do the stage program, which is then turned into the hybrid portion. That's when you turn on the cameras. And so everybody else has already built community. They've built a rapport with your MC because an MC is there to do that. The people on the couch probably wouldn't have paid $250 to go. They would never have been able to ever have attended it. That's what we have found with virtual events is that there's a lot of people who are there who couldn't have afforded it before and are kind of excited to be included.
Yeah.
And also that's what we call the base level donor. Those are the people who you say, listen, we would love $10 a month. This is a whole other conversation.
Absolutely.
Because this is into that. But basically what you're doing is bringing in a whole different class of donors who will be starting at the bottom of the silo and then being brought higher and higher if you're doing your stewardship right with your development team.
So at what point would you say now you break again into the next segment where, you know, your online audience is probably going to have a moment of, I don't know, entertainment when the auctioneer is actually calling bid numbers and what's happening in the ballroom? Do you see that as a separate segment or is it still part of the same hybrid?
I think you need to do it the same because the excitement that he builds. Once again, everybody, please get an amazing, amazing auctioneer. They are worth their weight in gold. I will tell you this. So many people say, well, we have a board member who's funny and he'll do it for free. And I'm thinking, oh, I just saw money flying out the window. I'm sorry. I saw people being bored and snoozing. I would have the virtual portion be warmed up before it goes to the live event. So while the people are eating dinner, maybe have the virtual event people, the hybrid virtual event, we'll call that the virtual end, click on first, have some entertainment, have some comedic interaction, some personal interaction, because just like with virtual events, a hybrid event should have the virtual guests be greeted as they come on and called out to build community. They've got their own community going. Yeah. And if they've got their own virtual portion MC there, as Zach or whoever the MC is going through this incredibly kinetic, exciting spiel and doing the bidding, there should be something happening on screen that's saying, hey, you, hey, AJ Steinberg, I see you sitting there. We know that you've got $50 that you would love to help build one more kennel for our dogs in need. So I think that having the virtual people have their own special, you know, entertaining person who hosts them, that will help to make it not seem so broken up.
So let me ask you another question now from, you know, the fundraising that would happen in person. You would have bid numbers. You don't call names. You call bid numbers. So how do we include these people if this is a one segment in person and virtual? Obviously, we're going to have to talk about a completely different thing, which is the latency problem. As you're doing over Zoom, there's going to be some latency. However, going back to the bid numbers, now it sounds like we have to change our process, the way we register, you know, bidders and the way we display bidders, so that if you're going to call Anka that's in the room and bidding, you're not going to call 399 bidding. You're going to have to call Anka so the person that's virtually joining knows who that is. Because it would be kind of like starting to get super boring if all they hear is, okay, 599, go three times and 10 times and all that, right?
Well, you usually don't know the people either. You have to remember, if you're in the back of the room and Anka at the front raises hers for 100, when you get down past the high levels, it's just a sea of paddles, right?
You've seen this. What I mean is virtually, we were able to see their names with donation levels coming through, right? That we're circling.
You can still do that. Well, what you would do is you would probably assign bidding numbers to the people as they click on virtually. When they sign up, they're given a bidding number. And as they bid, you would be having people online, just like you did before, where they would input the bidding. You would have somebody on the software and Google spreadsheet, however you do it. Everybody has a different way of doing it. But the platform where you're totaling up the numbers, you can have on screen the virtual numbers coming up too. So as Zach is calling them out in this, after he'll, behind him, the virtual numbers are coming in too. And then he can turn around and goes, whoa, we just got another $10,000, you know, in pledges online as well. It's like I said, this is a houseboat. Mm-hmm. It's never going to be seamless because the people who are watching virtually can see the live people. Unless the virtual people's bids as their virtual paddle raises are showing up on a screen, the people in the audience won't see them.
Which you would, because the moment you start creating this hybrid, I'm thinking you're already incorporated both audiences, so they feel like they partake into the event, right? I feel like I would certainly want to see somebody's name on the screen versus a number, because all connect with names, right? Like I don't call AJ 949 because you're from California and that's how the number starts with, right? It's like, I call you AJ. And I'm thinking, you know, this is definitely something that a lot of the fundraising platforms probably are already circling through their minds, like how we're going to make this work in a hybrid format.
Well, one way that you could do it is you could live stream the hybrid portion of the event during the paddle raise or the auction. So think about this. If you can actually see the feed as people are typing in their names, like AJ Steinberg, $100, if it's showing up on the screen at the same time, and one thing you could do that would be fun, and of course, I'm just thinking of this, is you could have a competition between the people in the audience and the people online to kind of see, you know, who's going to raise the most money. Is it virtual or live? And they're could be a competition going to make it fun and kind of interact with that. I think that what's going to happen is that there will be a live stream as people bid online. So when, as they make their bid, it's showing up in the ballroom with their name. You're right. Yeah. And to do it that way, there will be a lot of post-event kind of work to kind of consolidate and figure out names and numbers and bids. But I think that you're right. I think we need to see the names.
Yeah.
I actually like just raising the paddle. When I do paddle raises, I actually have a live volunteer walk over with a pledge sheet and thank the person, every single person who raises their paddle, even if it's 500 people. Mm-hmm. We have pledge sheets and volunteers with pens who walk over, they say thank you, they have the person fill out their information right there, and then we pick it up when the paddle raise is done, and they say thank you as they pick up the donation pledge cards. I like that personal touch. Well, I'm with you about names.
Yeah. And one thing that we were circling through our minds, because this came up as a discussion for a hybrid event that I'm working on for June, is what about, sure, we do the live bidding that's going to happen in person, the same way it has been done in the past, but this is where we transition the virtual part to another segment. This is where we transition to something either informational, promotional, entertainment-based. It can be anything. Make your own cocktail, whatever.
Right.
And then when we come back to the paddle raise, in order to have the seamless transition from bidding numbers, how about having everyone that is in the audience in person and everyone that's joining online bid on their mobile app, which now gives you the opportunity to see everyone's name rolling through the giving platform.
Right.
Everyone has a phone.
Yeah, that's definitely easier. I don't ever do mobile bidding when I have guests in a ballroom.
And that's the other part of the same coin, where now everyone's looking at their devices instead of networking and interacting. So there's definitely something that has to be figured out. Like you said, houseboat.
This is it. And this is the one time I would say maybe mobile bidding makes it easy. I never want to see a person with their phone out in a ballroom while they're sitting, even during dinner, because to me, that means I haven't done my job to make this amazing and engaging. And when Zach's up there and or whoever it is, your auctioneer, the minute people are on their phone, they don't put it down. Yeah. They're going to check the score. They're going to see if they got any texts. And you see the top of their heads. And literally the reason that we're all so successful is because there's excitement and personal connection and electricity. You felt the electricity in the room during these things. And so that's for fundraising. Yes, conferences, it's okay for people to be on their phone because it's such a long day and people do use the apps to communicate with each other. So you don't have that issue. Yeah. But for a fundraising event, if you have to go easy and you say, okay, I just can't deal with this anymore. Every platform has mobile bidding. That's the easiest. And their names will show up, not just their number, on a screen. Mm-hmm. So they may do it and they may look up. Go ahead. I give you full AJ permission to use your telephones during this transitional time to be graceful. But once we're back to live events, please put your phones away.
And I think it will be very much tied into the type of MC and auctioneer you have that can grab now their attention back if they were stolen away by social media while they're also mobile bidding. And we all are. It's like, oh, let me just check one thing. And then next thing you're going down the rabbit hole, right?
Yeah, that person. And I've got to tell you, you have to listen to that person, because Zach brought me in to do something on an event that was a very high powered Hollywood Oscar. It was tied to the Oscars. And it was he was very adamant that they were not sequencing it right. And sequencing, I teach whole workshops on engagement and sequencing. He showed me the timeline. And I said, Zach, this is a disaster. They're going to lose every single person in the audience. He goes, I have told them seven times. Literally, Zach was working so hard. And when I say they could have raised $500,000 in that room with those celebrities, poor Zach was so frustrated after it was over because they didn't listen to him. And exactly what he and I said was going to happen. Yeah. Everybody left before the paddle race and nobody cared about it. So listen to the professionals, whether it be Anka as the AV professional, Zach as, or whoever your auctioneer is, or an AJ. We're professionals. Yeah. We do this. We know what works. Please listen to us.
Yeah. I agree. And unfortunately, it's sad when you see that happening and from your experience that it's just not going to go the way they think. And I go back to how many events have we done and we've seen this happening in real life pan out, where the timing of things, the sequencing of things has such a huge impact on the bottom line at the end of the day, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it.
Well, AJ, we are going here on time. And I mean, I feel like we could actually talk for another 45 minutes because there's so much to be said about this topic. I have to bring you back in and talk other things, other topics, because this is just one tiny topic out of like this humongous amount of conversations could be had around virtual and hybrid events and then gracefully transitioning to in-person and how might that look like. But let me ask you, as trying to wrap up here, I have, you know, something that I like to ask every expert that I get to talk to on this podcast is, if I were to be a brand new event planner in this age of events and I was going to start my event planning business right now, what key lesson should I know and why?
Can I do two key lessons?
Absolutely. I mean, from 20 years of experience, I'm pretty sure you can do more than two.
The first one is create relationships where you really listen to what they want and their goals, help them goal set. I would say create relationships where you both understand where you need to go with the event. And two is write everything down. Don't assume you remember everything and that they remember everything. Super important. And three is be the adult in the room and say no to them if they really screw up. Sorry. And 7 and 20, yeah, there's one or two tips.
I love it. I just think, especially with the writing down, I couldn't agree more, because is it that we're getting younger by the year, or is it the pandemic that really just like, I can't remember anything anymore unless it's somewhere down?
I mean, if you have, like you, if I have 20 events going at one time and I've had 7 meetings the same day, I can't remember every detail. And the little details are what make you a great event planner as opposed to just an event planner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny because I was testing myself on a very busy week and I realized I cannot trust my memory like I used to, because before maybe I would, you know, I was capable of remembering all the details and then putting them down afterwards. But now I feel like it's even more important now to go back, put all those details down, and then move on to the next meeting, the next thing. And the times when I didn't because I was too busy or I just got grabbed into another Zoom call or one knows what, I'm at the end of the day scratching my head and I'm like, who said that and which event was it? And now I'm trying really hard to follow the timeline. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is not good.
It isn't. Well, you know what? That's a whole other conversation, is about how to keep track of things as an event planner. It's just notes upon notes upon notes.
So one last question, I promise. How do you keep yourself grounded and healthy? Do you have a hobby? What really gives you so much joy and life in the middle of the craziness of events, like one after another?
One is a really good relationship. I've been married 35 years and I have a great relationship. And the second, three things. And then gardening. I'm a fanatic, insane gardener. And the third is hiking and working out. I mean, those are the three things. I'm not really good. I'm like a 3 o'clock in the morning, wake up and think, oh my God, I should have written down this or done this person. So I'm probably not the best person to have said, but gardening and hiking and my husband. So those things.
I love that. Those are the pillars.
Yeah. I'm sure
I love it. Well, AJ, this is super awesome. I'm so glad we got to talk. Where can people find you online, on social media, whatever places that you engage with people most? So they, if they have questions, the workshops that you teach, please do tell us more about that.
Right. I teach 2 half-day workshops. One is how to create a successful event, and it will teach you everything from sponsorships to committee management to fundraising and strategizing and sequencing. And the other one is sponsorship. I teach how to find sponsors, work with sponsors, and keep sponsors. So I do that. And you can always find me at queenbeefundraising.com. That easy. But just send me an email. I answer every single email because I'm a relationship person. So feel free to email me at aj@queenbeefundraising.com.
Well, thank you for this time together. I love that we got a chance to do this. And I love that you got to share some of those tips that you've gained over the years, especially nowadays with virtual and hybrid events that we're moving into. Thank you again. I hope that we get to do this again, because I already have a few topics in my mind that we need to discuss next. You know what I mean?
Always happy. It's been such a pleasure. And thank you for doing this. I think that our world needs a lot of information. There's always new people coming in and they always need to do it right. So listen to what Anka has to say.
And all her guests. Thank you, AJ. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too. Thank you so much.
Okay, friends, this is it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and make sure to check out the links posted in the episode's notes. Do subscribe to stay tuned for our next episodes and the topics we will cover with our future guests. Follow our brand new Instagram account, Events Demystified Podcast, to stay in the know. I welcome your feedback. Keep that coming either via direct messaging on social media or via email at podcast@trefanevents.com, and that is TREEFANEVENTS.com. I wish you all a fabulous rest of your day, and we will hear each other again soon.